Good morning, everyone. 8:06 on your Tuesday morning. It's September 28th. I'm Sean Higgins, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. Looking at about 50 degrees in Park City at the moment, 46 in Heber, and on the line with me now with a full week forecast, we have NBC4 meteorologist Thomas Gaboy. Thomas, good morning, and looks like a little bit of snow could be in the forecast tonight.
Yeah, that is a possibility, Sean. So we're going to be talking about some pretty big changes. As you mentioned, we're sitting around 50 degrees in Park City, 43 degrees in Heber, 40 degrees in Alta. So as far as fall is concerned, I mean, it's downright mild outside. But a cold front is sitting just to the northwest of the state right now, and that cold front is going to be working its way northwest to southeast as we go through today. And that is going to be bringing us some big changes. So ahead of the front, a few isolated showers will be a possibility. So just think from now through around midday, could see an isolated shower or two, but for most of the time, it's going to be partly cloudy with times of patchy smoke as the temperature gradually begins to warm up. Just to the latest scan, it looks like we're now sitting at 57 degrees in Park City, and we're going to head towards the lower 60s in Park City, but that's about where we're going to stop because the cold front is going to start moving through from the late morning into the afternoon. And once the cold front moves through, the temperatures are actually going to start to cool thanks to a pretty strong and gusty northwesterly breeze, which could be upwards of 10 to 15 miles per hour, maybe a few gusts a little bit higher than that. So we're going to be hitting the daytime high here relatively soon, about a 40% rain chance. And then from midday through the early stages of the afternoon, there will also be the chance for a few thunderstorms. Then as we go into tonight, we're going to be seeing those temperatures drop quickly. The overnight low tonight in Park City will be very close to the freezing mark, and with rain, with moisture still around, that could result in very cold showers, or it could also result in some snow as well. Now, if we do see some snow, no snow accumulation is expected, but that is going to be a possibility tonight with how cold it's going to be and with all the moisture in place. And then tomorrow morning, we start off with a slight chance for a few showers, maybe some snow showers as well. Again, not really expecting much in the way of any accumulation until you get up to some of those higher elevations where you could maybe see a light dusting. But for our Wednesday, we'll see the rain chance stay around 40% through the early half of the day as the moisture starts to move away to the east. The daytime high tomorrow, 52 degrees. So we're going to be cooler for our daytime high tomorrow compared to where we're sitting right now. And then on Wednesday night, we're going to see those temperatures hover near freezing once again. By that time, it looks like just about all the available moisture will be just about out of here. So maybe a rain shower early on Wednesday evening, but by Wednesday night, going to be looking at a mostly clear sky. But after we get past Wednesday night, we're going to be looking at some fantastic weather for the second half of the week into the upcoming weekend. We're on Thursday, mostly sunny, a high of 59 degrees. We'll be in the middle to upper 30s Thursday night and Friday morning. But then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, each day will bring a daytime high of around 65 degrees, and overnight lows will be around 40. So we're looking at some fantastic weather for this upcoming weekend.
Thomas, thank you, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
That sounds good. Have a great day.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour, starting at 8:15, Summit County Deputy Manager Jana Young will discuss the agenda for tomorrow's county council meeting. Ron Jackenthal of the Live Like Sam Foundation joins to talk about some future programming ahead of next month's Live Like Sam Day. And Park City Emergency Program Manager Mike McComb will be on to discuss the city's upcoming Treasure Hill fire mitigation efforts. Also happening today, join KPCW for a live stream of the debate between the Park City Council candidates today, starting at 12:30 p.m. You can watch these debates on our website, kpcw.org, or on our KPCW Radio Facebook page. In case you miss it live, KPCW will also be rebroadcasting the debate in its entirety on air starting tonight at 7 p.m. Well, last week, Parkites noticed the letters on PC Hill were altered to spell BOC ahead of late Park City High School principal Bob O'Connor's memorial. Sunday afternoon, hundreds gathered to remember O'Connor on his school's campus. KPCW's Ben Lassiter has more.
O'Connor passed away of complications from ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, on January 14th. He was 59. At the memorial Sunday afternoon, about 200 family, friends, former students and community members honored him in the Park City Eccles Center. His daughter, Caitlin O'Connor Hanks, spoke first. After her, longtime friend Mike Sellers, former student Albany Miller, and former colleagues Sharon Ellsworth Nilsson and Julie Hooker followed. His son, Brian O'Connor, offered a final speech after a photo slideshow. They talked about his way of leading by example to inspire others, whether those were his students or his closest friends and family. They told stories of hunting, skiing, and camping to describe his work-hard, play-hard attitude. Four musicians performed a rendition of Amazing Grace, one of O'Connor's favorites, blended with Rachel Platten's fight song. Pianist Nicole Stankovic told the audience the latter was a song of encouragement to him. As his student, Stankovic said O'Connor was a great supporter who even crossed state lines to see her perform after high school. The memorial concluded with a toast. O'Connor moved to the Park City High School principal position in June of 2012. Before this assignment, he had been a principal of Treasure Mountain Junior High School. In total, he spent 25 years in the school district as a teacher and administrator. For a link to O'Connor's obituary, visit kpcw.org. Ben Lasseter, KPCW News.
Well, the owners of the Outlet Mall near Kimball Junction are proposing to open a Harmon's grocery store there, saying it will revitalize the commercial center. The plan, which would demolish and reconstruct a portion of the mall, will be introduced to the Snyderville Planning Commission at its regular session this afternoon. Rick Bruff has more.
The Snyderville Commission is meeting electronically. The proposal for the mall, Outlets Park City, is the first item on the Planning Commission's work session, which starts at 4:30. Planning staff reports that the applicant, the firm SRE Ontario, wants to demolish the 54,000 square foot Building C. In the mall's roughly U-shaped configuration of stores, that building is at the top or south end. The applicants say their proposal is a redevelopment, but the planning staff says it's a new entitlement since the Harmon store will be larger at 76,000 square feet. In a submittal to the county, the applicant's attorney, Justin Keyes, said the mall needs a retail food center because, quote, the former playbook for retail is simply not working, unquote. The Outlet Mall was built in 1991, and the county approved expansions to the center in 1999 and 2014. Keyes said the retail market has shifted rapidly to online shopping, a trend accelerated by the COVID-19 pandemic. He said that Outlets Park City, made up almost entirely of soft goods fashion tenants, has become outdated. The attorney noted that in the last 2 years, over 75,000 square feet of retailers have vacated the mall. Occupancy has decreased from 95 to below 80%, and sales decreased over 32% from 2019 to 2020. He argued that Harmon's will be a much-needed anchor tenant. He said the store has a large regional following and will bring out those customers and their dollars. The county staff reported that on Tuesday, the Snyderville commissioners are being asked to discuss whether the project must comply with Policy 2.3 of the general plan, which says that the county won't add new entitlements unless the applicant can show a compelling public benefit. The applicants contend they are redeveloping entitlements that have existed since the early 90s. They said the two previous expansions of the mall advanced the public interest and said the new plan will improve open space, mass transit, and the trail access system at the mall. Later on in the Planning Commission's work session, it's being asked to discuss Policy 2.3 and whether the existing language should be retained or changed. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Well, the Summit County Council will return to regular session tomorrow. Joining me now to discuss this week's agenda is Summit County Deputy Manager Jana Young. Jana, good morning and thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
So it looks like right about 4 o'clock, 4:15, we're going to see a presentation of the third quarter budget from Matt Levitt. This is purely informational. Anything we should expect to see here?
Yeah, so typically the county's finance officer, Matt Levitt, gives quarterly updates to the council on the status of county revenues and expenditures. And so tomorrow, as you mentioned, he'll be presenting the third quarter budget. And to summarize his report, which folks can read in the meeting packet on our website, county revenues are looking really good. Sales tax revenues in particular continue to come in higher than we had expected or what was budgeted. Additionally, permit revenues also are looking really good, which is a reflection of the busy construction that's occurring in the county that I know we're all witnessing and experiencing. And then on the other side, the county's expenses are also looking really good. When you adjust for some large annual expenses that have not been paid yet, such as our health insurance premiums and debt debt service. Our expenses are estimated to be about 59% of the budget, with already 66% of the year elapsed. So some really good news to share with the council tomorrow.
Quite a stark contrast from a year ago. I know certainly here in Park City and elsewhere in the Wasatch back, everyone was bracing for a potentially economically catastrophic winter. It must be nice to be in a different situation a year later.
Absolutely. And in fact, Matt Levitt, our county's finance officer, will tell you it's partly due to the proactive actions that the council took to cut expenditures and defer some costs during the pandemic before we knew the full scope of the economic impacts from it. So that put us in a really good situation entering this year. And then added to that, the sales taxes that are coming in exceeding projections, that has really helped our situation. As I'm sure, you know, residents in particular noticed, things really didn't slow down in Summit County over the winter, and certainly not this past summer. Particularly out there on the trails and in around town. So, we're feeling good about the situation we're in.
They certainly did not slow down. Later on the agenda, County Council will be considering participating in the Cities for Forests Call to Action. This is a program with more than 70 cities supporting healthy forests around the country. Is this something more than a declaration? Does the county have to contribute funding, or does help the county get any funding for these kinds of programs?
So if we join the call to action, there is no funding commitment. However, it could increase our visibility and leadership on these forest health issues at the international level, which might help increase investment into this resilience fund that we're creating. If you recall last week on your program, I talked about how the county is involved in a really exciting project to make the Weber River watershed more resilient to high severity wildfire, and in an effort to protect that water system. And so through that work, we've been introduced to this environmental nonprofit called World Resources Institute, or WRI, and they are working with the U.S. Forest Service on these innovative financing models that have helped complete these watershed restoration and healthy forest projects across the nation. And so it's WRI that has formed this coalition of 73 international cities and counties that's called Cities for Forests, and they're inviting us to join that coalition as well. And this group is committed to initiatives that better conserve, restore, and sustainably manage forests around the world. So in addition to the call to action, we could possibly join this group as well. And we're interested in having this conversation with the council, because it does seem the goals of this call to action are in alignment with our county's environmental sustainability goals and public lands program. And as I mentioned, also potentially giving us the chance to enhance our visibility on these issues at the international level, which may attract some additional investors to that resilience fund that we're building for watershed restoration and forest health projects.
Certainly forest health, something on the top of everyone's minds with the Parley's Canyon fire just about a little over a month ago, and then all the wildfires burning in the west as well. So something at the front of everyone's minds here in Summit County. There will also be a declaration by County Manager Tom Fisher that there is an intent to go through the truth in taxation process. We heard from Councilor Chris Robinson last week that the county policy is to consider tax increases every about 5 years or so, rather than having one big increase after 20 years. What is being proposed?
So it might be helpful to start by explaining what truth in taxation is, in case your listeners are not familiar with it. So in Utah, counties are guaranteed to collect the same amount in property tax revenues each year, despite the performance of the economy, either up or down. The only way we can collect more property tax revenue is if there's new growth, such as a new housing commercial development coming online, but we cannot capture inflation. On the other hand, we also don't lose any property tax revenues if there is a recession. And so this makes property taxes the most reliable and stable revenue source that the county collects. So if we want to take advantage of inflation or increase property tax revenues at all, outside of new growth, a public taxing entity must go through this process called truth in taxation. And this process is usually kicked off by a notice of intent to the governing body of that taxing entity. So in our case, that's the county manager notifying the county council. And then there is a number of public meetings where the increases in both dollar amount and percentage are presented and discussed, along with several public hearings and notifications to every property owner within the county. So tomorrow, the county manager will present a letter to the council stating the intent to go through truth in taxation per our policy to look at this every 5 years. And so his proposal is to raise, he's not proposing to do this on every fund that the county has, but to raise the county's general fund by about $1.5 million, which is a 9% increase, the assessing and collecting fund increasing that by 500,000 or 14.5%, and then service area 6, which covers all the unincorporated areas of the county that the county provides municipal services to, proposing to increase that by 300,000 or 28.4%.
And speaking of the assessing and collecting fund, how does that differ from the general fund?
So I think it's more about the revenue source that goes into that and what that is used for. I am not an expert on all those details, but I do know there are a few of our departments, like our recorder's office, for instance, who's an elected office, where a lot of her functions are funded by the assessing and collecting fund. So there will be some services covered by general fund and then others by the assessing and collecting fund.
And can the council discuss any other tax increases during this process, like solid waste improvements or resilience to the watershed, anything like that?
Yes, those can be included. They're not included in the proposal right now, but that's why we're wanting to get some direction from the council on those issues and if they want to pursue that. I should clarify that tomorrow is just a notification of intent. There's still a lot more process involved in this, and it's very likely that the council will decide not to go forward with truth in taxation this year and maybe defer it for another year, or they may choose to ask the county manager to increase or decrease his proposal and possibly include some of those other things. They have talked about wanting to raise additional revenue for things like this resilience fund that I mentioned earlier, or the solid waste fee, as you mentioned, some monies into search and rescue and some other things like that, maybe EMS. So we'll have to have that conversation with the council. And then if they do decide that, we'll have to come back most likely around October 13th when the county manager presents his budget for the 2022 fiscal year to the council. We'll have to include those increases. And certainly as we kick off the truth in taxation process, all of those details will be disclosed and very transparent to the community.
Speaking a little bit more of the timeline, if you mentioned that the council is not obligated to go forward with this process this year, is there a specific deadline for some of these things before they need to be reassessed from the very beginning, or can this just continue indefinitely, theoretically?
So we do have to 7 or more days before the election, which is around October 26th or earlier. Notification has to be mailed to the property, to the owner of each property in the county. And then there's some notification requirements around the November 24th. There's other things that happen in December. So because of this process and these notifications, they do have to make a decision pretty soon here, probably sometime in October, so that we get all of that noticed to the public so they understand what might be happening to their property taxes.
And finally,
and then I think December 15th would be the public hearing on the 2022 budget, and that's when those property taxes might be adopted.
Sounds like a thorough process. Finally, another public hearing to hear arguments pro and con about the $50 million open space bond. Jen, as you said before, these hearings aren't legally required, but why another hearing in Snyderville?
So the county council opted to have another public comment period on this issue in the basin area. They're also contemplating holding one in Camas based on requests that came from residents at the hearing last week. I think it's just another opportunity to have this discussion about this measure with the public to make sure everyone's questions are answered and for the council to get and a more opportunity to hear from the community on whether or not we should go forward with this ballot question. And so, again, I think it's in the spirit of transparency and education that we are opening up additional opportunities for public engagement on the GO bond question.
And we heard last week the public comments supported the bond, but wanted to make sure the bond would support the Camas area. Will the county hold another hearing in Camas specifically?
Yes, they're looking at doing that, I think, around October 6th. We're still working out those details, and we will announce it as soon as it's scheduled. But the council is very interested in holding that. And I think they're trying to do it before ballots are mailed out on October 12th. So that's why we're targeting that meeting.
Anything else for us, Jana, before we let you go this morning?
Yeah, I know Mike McComb is on your show later today. He might be talking about this fire panel that we're hosting along with them on the Parley's Fire this Thursday from 6 to 7:30 at the Santee Auditorium. We encourage the community to come out to that. If they can't come in person, it's also going to be broadcast over Zoom. But we have a great panel of about 14 members who are going to be talking about fire and lessons learned and how our community can be even better prepared for the next one.
Sounds like it will be an exciting week for you at the county. Jana, thank you so much for joining us. And enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, you too.
Summit County Council starts tomorrow, right around 4 p.m. via Zoom and in person. Links to participate can be found on kpcw.org. Well, the runaway growth of algae can choke lakes with green slime, and it can poison the water, threatening people and their pets. Experts say increasing drought in the West is making these algal blooms more likely. Bert Johnson with the Mountain West News Bureau explains.
Algae like to grow in warm, still, nutrient-rich water. So Sudeep Chandra with the Global Water Center at the University of Nevada, Reno, predicts algal blooms will get more common thanks to climate change.
We're seeing excessive algal growth in Lake Tahoe from time to time, but we're also seeing it back east in the eastern Great Basin at the Great Salt Lake.
In Reno, Nevada, city officials have to issue more public health advisories for algal blooms during drought years. That's because cyanobacteria, also known as blue-green algae, can release deadly toxins when less water is flowing. Chandra says cyanobacteria don't always produce toxins, although scientists don't know why yet. They also play a critical role in ecosystems, where algae form the base of the food chain. In the meantime, he says it's better to be cautious around your local lake during an algal bloom. And as temperatures go down, that green slime will start to go away. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Bert Johnson.
Well, Live Like Sam Day is coming up. Ron Jackenthal of the Live Like Sam Foundation joins me now to talk about some future programming ahead of next month's Live Like Sam Day. Ron, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So it sounds like you've been a pretty busy guy since we last talked to you. How has the summer been and the ramp up to Live Like Sam Day coming along?
There was summer. you know, we have been busy. So 10-10 is Live Like Sam Day, which is the sixth anniversary of Sam's celebration of life. My son passed away. It'll be 6 years on the 1st. And, you know, the community really has embraced us. I've heard quite a few people refer to Sam as Park City's kid. And, you know, it's pretty amazing. It's very heartwarming. But we've got a Live Like Sam Day was essentially a day that we created with U.S. Ski Team, a day of kindness and positivity. And then since then, over the last 6 years, we've been busy. But this summer, we've been really busy.
Sounds like it. And for people unfamiliar, maybe just moved to town or unfamiliar with Live Like Sam and who Sam was a truly world-class freestyle skier, unfortunately passed away several years ago. What was the impetus of starting this foundation and the work you do now?
So, you know, when you, or hopefully you don't, but when you lose someone you love, that's such a big part of your purpose in life, you wrestle with it. And I think for us, it was almost easy. Like Sam was 16. He was U.S. overall men's junior national free champion for kids 18 and under, and he just had such a impactful life on so many and such a powerful personality that was really hard to be completely down. And we always kind of knew what Sam wanted was to live. Like, Sam was about life. Sam was about energy. And some of the essentials that he brought and that we're using in our foundation right now is kindness and courage and joy and leadership and self-awareness, which was a lot for a 16-year-old.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about this second annual event. I understand you sold out 225 or more people. What other details can you give us about this?
Sure. So we're having an event on October 9th, so the day before Live Like Sam Day. It's a week from Saturday. It's at Utah Olympic Park. It starts at 6. It goes to 11. We have live music, a live auction, silent auction. It's catered. We'll have a Flying Ace show. Sam was part of the Flying Ace All-Star, professional jumping team. And the fire department seems to be indicating with all the cold weather and conditions, we will probably even have some fireworks that night above Olympic Park, which was very similar to what we did at Sam's Celebration of Life on 2015, which was attended by about 1,300 people, really just celebrating the way this kid showed up for himself and the community.
Wonderful. And I understand there's still some participation options, silent auction. Any more info you can tell us about that?
Yeah, so we've got a couple of general admission tickets left, which basically gives somebody the full access to everything we're doing that night, with the exception of the 1 hour where we're doing some brief presentations and the live auction inside the theater room of the museum at Olympic Park. It's just there, we're at capacity there. But our community's really rallied around us again. This is the second time we've had a fundraiser or a live fundraising event. We have well north of $150,000 worth of trips and live auction items and silent auction items. And if someone's not coming to the event or able to attend, we'll be putting out on our website and also in the newspaper starting next weekend how they can participate. So it's really easy. They can quickly register to be part of the silent auction. They can be bidding as if they were in the room from their mobile device. And I think there's going to be a lot of happy people in this community winning some incredible trips, dining experiences, and other experiences.
And where can people find more information on this and the Live Like Sam Foundation in general?
Yeah, I mean, literally just livelikesam.org. It's on our front page, and it'll take you right to the event. But they can register. They can register and let us know they want to be part of the silent auction, and we'll make sure they've got the right information.
And I see the foundation will have some new programming coming up based on the five essentials of Sam: self-awareness, kindness, courage, leadership, and joy. What is this new programming?
We're gonna really get into the meat of announcing it for some kind of strategic reasons at the event. But one of the things we did, and I felt really good about it, is I felt like we were operating a bit in a vacuum over the last couple of years. It's been 6 years since Sam's passing. We have been a fund under the Community Foundation, which has been an incredible relationship for us. It really gave us our wings. And last year, we became a fully fledged 501c3. And so with that, it was really kind of, where do we take this so we have our own lane and we're the most impactful for our youth, not only today, but going forward, and really create a legacy around the foundation. So we engaged with one of my advisors and his team at Utah State. We did a very comprehensive survey into the community. There were key stakeholders across really every avenue: civic, religious, sports, education, wellness, family, and so on. And we learned a lot. And outside of the elephant in the room, which I think in communities like ours is generally substance abuse and drugs and alcohol that are their concerns of parents and educators, antisocial behavior, racism, social and emotional health and anxiety, lack of access to services, those are the things that really popped to the top. And so a lot of our programming is really built on addressing those. And think of it this way. And again, I won't go into too many details now because we're going to be really announcing it at our event. But think about, how many adults wait till their 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s before they get life coaching or they get therapy or they get guidance or mentorship. And the program we're going to announce is called Thrive, and it's a program that is geared at helping give kids skills-based resources to help them navigate life better. And there are things that are currently being offered, really not being offered, a little bit in the schools, a little bit with some of the clubs, but for the most part, it's extremely comprehensive. And what I can tell you is the curriculum is the exclusive curriculum of Ed Diener, who is noted as the father of positive psychology. And we have rights to that curriculum here in Summit and Wasatch County. And we have a team from a local organization called Wellbeing Elevated, who's just incredible between their leaders, their clinicians, their curriculum. And it's really going to be incredibly impactful. And we expect to start our first programming in early January.
And I understand you're trying to engage all the area's public and charter schools to help celebrate what it means to live like Sam. Can you talk any more about the school district aspect of it?
Yeah, so I think, you know, Sam represents the bright side of what can be, right? He represents optimism and hard work and kindness and positivity. So we've engaged, last year we engaged with the school district and it was great. We wound up kind of putting out small lessons into the community that schools, and it was COVID, so it was a little challenging because there was a lot of kids that were not physically there face to face. But we got a lot of support from the public, private, and charter schools last year to just tell the story of Sam, why it is important, why it's impactful, how they can live like Sam. And they also were rewarded with stickers and pencils. I'm kind of like the king of swag. Anyone who comes across me knows that. There's always a treat in my pocket that has something to do with Live Like Sam. But this year, we are working with several high school students at PC CAPS through the high school, the mentorship program, and they're helping, along with my daughter, Skylar, who's back at school in Massachusetts. We're putting together a plan this week that's going to go out to the school district, and the public, private, and charter schools are going to engage their teachers and their students in what it means to live like Sam, possibly have a few lessons around how kids live like Sam, and we've got these awesome new stickers that are like the perfect sticker to, you know, put on a helmet, put on a snowboard, put on a skateboard, put on a bike. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see a lot of blue Live Like Sam stickers around the community. We've got, I think, 10,000 going out.
And I see that Live Like Sam has been pounding the pavement a little bit, a little community survey to 1,600. What is this community survey?
Yeah, so, we really... And I think the Community Foundation here does a really excellent job, you know, with a community engagement model. For us, we just decided instead of living in a vacuum, we wanted to really go out and engage the community and see what their thoughts, like what did they perceive Live Like Sam as being or doing? What are the biggest challenges facing our youth and our their families? And how can Live Like Sam play a role and participate? And that is where we've got our two-pronged approach. So the Thrive program, which we're announcing next week, which will launch in January, really is around the curriculum, and it's going to be facilitated, part learned on your own, part facilitated in cohorts of 10, where our youth will get to really explore vulnerable issues together in a safe and nurtured environment. And then we also have 3 different scholarships that we're announcing as well. They will also start in early 2022. And they're really more about rewarding kids for living like Sam.
Anything else you have for us this morning, Ron, before we let you go?
We're grateful for the community support. I'd say just, you know, keep a lookout. If you want to participate in our auction, that'd be amazing. We definitely are in a fundraising capacity. Our goal is to impact a minimum of 300 kids next year in our community, and half of them, the intent is for them to be scholarships. So really, anyone that is in financial need that wants to benefit from the program, Thrive, or participate in our scholarships, roughly half of those will be set aside for people that are either on free and reduced lunches or just need, you know, some financial support. And there's a lot of families in our community that do need financial support. And we're really proud of that. The last one I would throw out is of the 3 scholarships, one of them my daughter created. It's called Give Like Sam. And basically, that'll be the first one we launch. And we will launch it in Q4 leading into 2022. But kids can apply for essentially funding to do a community service project. So just to give an example, if a group of kids that are sixth graders want to apply to do a project for Peace House, maybe it's a car wash, they'll present a business plan to us. We'll evaluate their plan. We'll kind of nurture and help them along, help them figure out what they need for funding, the strategy behind how they're gonna get people to come to their event, help them raise money, and then that money will not go back to Live Like Sam. It will go to a cause that they've chosen that's near and dear to their heart. And we're really proud of that. I think, this is such a beautiful community. We wanna make sure we continue to keep turning up more and more philanthropic and generous kids, and it's never too early to start.
Once again, Live Like Sam Day coming up on October 10th. Ron Jackenthal of the Live Like Sam Foundation, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and best of luck with everything coming up.
Thanks, pal. Always good to see you.
You too. Well, the Heber City Planning Commission will meet today. One of the two developments it will review for a mixed-use development that would build a new Smith's Marketplace. KPCW's Ben Lassiter has the details.
The mixed-use development is in an early stage in a long process that could bring a Smith's Marketplace to Heber. In Tuesday's meeting, the Planning Commission will review and consider approving the concept and lot boundaries. The proposed marketplace would be a new store in town, not connected with the Smith's grocery store already there. It would be at 900 North Main Street, which is about halfway between the grocery store and the Back 40 Grill. As of Monday, details about what would happen to the old Smiths if a new one is built weren't available. The new development proposal is classified as a mixed-use residential commercial zone. Many details aren't included in what the commission will review in this week's meeting, including what types of housing it would include. In addition to the new Smiths, the proposal includes a commercial area and gas station. The project would require building a new road, 900 North, to connect the development to Main Street. The project would cover 14.5 acres, with the Smiths accounting for more than 11 of those. Also at the meeting, the Planning Commission will review a commercial concept for a new Prince Dental location. The dentist's office is currently located in Midway and would relocate to the new building at 1355 South on Highway 189. The Planning Commission approved a similar application in 2019, but the project was delayed. So in this week's meeting, the commission will also consider granting final approval. The property is currently being used as a car sales and repair garage and storage space. The meeting will take place at Heber City Hall at 75 North Main Street Tuesday evening at 6 o'clock. For a link to attend the meeting virtually via video conference, visit the city website. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
Well, Park City will begin fire mitigation efforts on Treasure Hill this week. Park City Emergency Program Manager Mike McComb joins me right now to discuss those efforts in a community panel that's happening this week. Mike, good morning, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
So let's talk a little bit about this panel on Thursday. We had Jenna Young, Summit County Manager, on. She mentioned it as well. It's going to be a joint effort between the county and Park City?
Correct. Yes.
And what can we expect here? Is it going to be kind of a presentation, or is it a Q&A session?
So a little bit of both, really appreciate the partnership that we have with the county. We are going to hear from a panel of responding agencies. Agents first go over a timeline of events and discuss kind of how that all went down, and then hear from the various responding agencies, their observations, any lessons learned, and then move into a section where we discuss how the community can be prepared on an individual and family household level. Everything from defensible space to home hardening to preparation of 72-hour kits, coming up with an emergency communications plan for the household, and then go into discussion and Q&A.
And part of the Park City Council was briefed by the fire district last week. I'm assuming it's going to be a similar type of presentation given on Thursday. At the government level, it sounded like, all things considered, Park City and Summit County were actually incredibly well prepared for something like this. I know Park City recently passed their emergency plan just a couple months ago, I believe. What was your take on that?
Yeah, absolutely, Sean. I think talking to our agency partners that both at the local and the state and even the federal level, that all the coordination and cooperation that happened for this fire really went down absolutely the best that could be expected under the circumstances. I mean, it's never easy. There's always some circumstances and details that throw a little bit of a wrench into the plans, but that everybody responded and everyone was just, the outcome couldn't have gone much better, I think. And I include the community in that too. There was just phenomenal response from members of the community, supporting folks at the Red Cross shelter that was set up at the Park City High School, folks who stepped up to donate food and water to the firefighters, and just it was incredible response all around.
Mm-hmm. And I want to touch a little bit on some of this fire mitigation and defensible space. I'm sure you'll go into much more detail on Thursday on this. But for people who may be new to fire country, we have a lot of new people coming into the Wasatch back over the last year. They hear the word defensible space. Are they putting up, digging a moat around their property? What are they doing to make their house a little less susceptible to fire?
Absolutely. And great question, Sean. And so when we talk about defensible space, we talk about creating kind of a buffer zone around a residence that allows firefighters the space that they need to be able to get in and defend that home from a wildfire if it were to encroach onto the property. And so living in the wildland-urban interface like we do, pretty much all of Summit County is included within this, the WUI as we call it. So it's really important on individual homeowners and HOAs to get out and do that work and create that buffer zone to give their home a fighting chance, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And we're also maybe talking about what people can do to be prepared. Is that an emergency kit, having an evacuation plan for their household? Is it in addition to what the city has formally accepted?
Yes, absolutely. Exactly what you said. I think that one of the things that we tend to forget, we're so incredibly blessed to have just great service from our fire service and police and law enforcement, public safety agencies. We're used to in this country picking up the phone, dialing 911 in an emergency, and within 5 minutes, we've got a fire engine, an ambulance, and a police car outside our homes. And that will absolutely not be the case in a widespread disaster such as we saw at the Parley's Canyon Fire or any other natural or man-made disaster. So it really falls to the individual, to families, to households, to come up with a plan, an evacuation plan if everyone's together in the home, how they're going to evacuate from that area, have supplies on hand where they can easily get to them in an emergency, and be able to sustain themselves for up to 72 hours or maybe even longer. And then take into account that it's highly likely that people will not be in the same place when an emergency happens. Kids may be at school, parents may be at work, all sorts of different circumstances. So having a plan on how to communicate under those circumstances.
And I want to touch on some of the work that's going to be done over on Treasure Hill, just out our window here at KPCW, over the next weeks and months. What is the extent of this project, and what is the first phase that's being done in the immediate future?
Yeah. So the initial phase is working on that defensible space on the city-owned property. So identifying those areas of city-owned land for the Treasure property that abuts the private homes and residences, and working to create that out 100 yards from the home, 100 feet from the home, to create more defensible space and thin that out, remove the dead and fallen trees and underbrush to help just thin that out and mitigate the risk.
And I know certainly it was about a year ago Basin Recreation had their own wildfire mitigation project in almost the exact area where the Parley's Canyon fire happened. There was quite a bit of community pushback on some of that. People see thinning of the forest. You hear the term old growth trees thrown out a lot. Has there been pushback from the community at all on this? And is there old growth here in Park City?
Sure. Yeah. So to my knowledge, we've not had pushback on this, and I think that the Parley's Canyon fire probably helped drive the point home somewhat. One of the things that that I think we've all come to believe is that a healthy forest is this vast expanse of unbroken expanse of trees, just as far as the eye can see. And in reality, that doesn't happen in nature. We've gotten very, very good. Our Forest Service has gotten very, very good at fighting wildfires over the past century or so, detecting them early and then immediately extinguishing them to prevent further spread. But fire is actually part of the natural landscape, and it's part of the cycle. So a healthy forest, in fact, is it's patchy. So there's some open space, there's some new growth happening where a fire may have happened a couple of years before. There's some medium-sized trees, some older trees, which are actually fairly resistant to fire if you remove the fuels from around their bases, those ladder fuels, as we call them. Really what we, when you look at those, that vast unbroken expanse that I mentioned, those trees are all competing for light, for water, for soil, for air. I mean, it's just, they're basically killing each other out in the competition. So trying to move away from that, and I mean, in a healthy forest, you should be able to walk amongst the trees or ski between them if you prefer.
I think many people here prefer to ski between the trees.
I think that's true. I'll include myself in that group. So,
me as well. I know. Looking back at kind of you mentioned the history of forest management in the United States. I know certainly in the 1800s, much of the West was actually clear cut for timber. Was Park City, that area, Park City area, part of that? And a lot of the mines here need the timber to frame the mine shafts. How old is the forest here? Do you know?
So certainly, you know, I don't know the exact history of the forestry, from the forestry aspect of it. Certainly some of it was used for construction of homes and for mines and other uses. And we have our own history with fires, with the city having burned down at least three times in the past. So we always want to prevent that from happening again. But a lot of the trees that you see were replanted around those mining days. So. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I remember one of the briefings from the fire department, I forget exactly when this was, but they actually talked about how the ski runs at Park City Mountain Resort, Canyonside, and Deer Valley actually create incredible fire breaks. How secure is Park City given its geography and what is already cut into the hillside here?
Sure. Yeah. So that's it's a very valid observation that does serve as some defensible space, and that it creates a gap in those fuels. One of the things that that we have to keep in mind, though, is that our city property abuts Salt Lake County, and there's a whole mountain range behind what we see here in Park City. If we were to get a large-scale fire coming over the ridge, it would be dicey. It'd be sporty, and those embers from fires, especially if they're being wind-driven, some of those embers can travel well over a mile.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to touch briefly on kind of the interagency coordination that needs to happen, not just between Park City and Summit County, but you mentioned Salt Lake County, the U.S. Fire Service. Congressman Blake Moore introduced a wildfire mitigation bill hoping to secure tens of millions of dollars over the next couple of years to help in these efforts. Have you been part of any of those discussions on what some of that extra funding could be used for?
Well, so certainly we have some ideas. I'm co-chairing a committee with Jess Kirby of Summit County Public Lands called the Western Summit County Fuels Committee, and it consists of both the city and the county, as well as the resorts, HOAs, and other large landowners in the area. And we're looking at ways to collaborate and coordinate work on large open spaces where we can draw down that risk. We can reduce those fuels and hopefully mitigate our risk.
Mm-hmm. And once again, before we run out of time, this community panel on Thursday, How can people participate? Is this going to be in person, over Facebook Live, Zoom, anything like that?
It is. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Sean. It is going to be a hybrid event, so we will have both in-person as well as online offerings, and I think it's by Zoom, and we'll get that link out to folks.
Mm-hmm. And where in person will this be?
It will be at the Santee Auditorium at the Park City Library on Park Ave. And so 6 p.m. to 7:30.
Sounds like a wonderful event to learn some really important information if you are a resident of the area, and maybe brush up on some old knowledge you might have if you haven't been thinking about this for too much. Mike, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Anything else you want to add before we let you go?
No, Sean, thank you very much for having me on this morning. I do really just want to applaud the community and all of our agency partners who came together so well during kind of the big one for us. This is what we saw, and it was a fantastic response. Hopefully we can take some lessons learned from this to have an even better response for the next one.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us this morning. That's Park City Emergency Program Manager Mike McComb.